I work through the fear until it's not scary anymore. You're not controlling your fear, you're just trying to step out of it. As he's climbing and as you hear him kind of like talking himself through things, he was like, yeah, I just want to go and see what feels scary. If this feels scary, like how do I make it not scary? And that was like his preparation, like trying things over and over. There's one part of the route that was kind of one of the riskier parts where he had two choices. He could either boulder it, which is you jump, or he had to do, I think they call it the karate kick, where he puts one leg out and then like crosses over. It shows him doing it over and over and over. There was no option. He had to perfect every single step. And I feel like that is how he got over the fear or the things that felt scary. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Ditto. I'm Ashley Hatch, one of your hosts of Ditto, here with Dr. Matt Moore. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm really, really well. I might sound a little stuffy. I think it's allergies, the changing of kind of the seasons. And at least here in Utah, it's been fires and the air hasn't been very clean. So if I sound stuffy, I apologize. Other than that, I'm doing really, really well. How are you, Ash?
I'm doing well also. Thanks for asking. Just, you know, in the grind of season, practicing every day, working hard, having fun. It's good. Things
yeah,
are good.
Yeah. Who's yeah. the next opponent? Who's the next one you guys are going to
We have a friendly against Arsenal. They come to us at Audi. Yep. Should be a fun game. I'm excited. And yeah, and then right after that, the next week, we get back into regular season against Kansas City, which will be a fun one because we haven't played them yet, wow. and they're at the top of the table. So,
yeah. How are those UK teams? I know the NWSL is king, queen, however you want to say it.
Yes. From our personal opinion.
Yes. When you play Arsenal or Man City or whomever over there,
yeah,
is it like high competition? Are they good or do you usually beat up on them?
That's a good question. We've never played a WSL team before, so
I had no idea.
We'll see. I feel like it's this kind of ongoing controversy of like which league is better, which is the most competitive. So it's fun to have these friendlies. We are at different places in our season, so that's always kind of hard for whoever is starting their season or whoever's in the middle of the season. Kind of has a little bit of advantage, some would say. Style of play is different, but I feel like it's going to be a good game. They're good teams. It'll always be competitive. But since it is a friendly, I think both teams just use it as an opportunity to get better and get players minutes and continue to grow. And then winning is always nice. So,
but deep down you want to kick their ASS.
Yeah, of course, always.
Of course. I just think of like my Chelsea Blues coming and playing RSL in the men's league, and it just doesn't seem like much of a competition. I don't know, MLS, in my humble opinion, just isn't there yet. Yeah. I don't know if they ever will be.
Yeah.
And from, you know, being around you, NWSL seems like the best league in the world when it comes to the women.
Yeah, so, I would agree with you, but I know I'm super biased, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just leave it at that.
Arsenal, are they like I can see like the cannon, like Arsenal,
yeah.
right? Like,
yep, they're the red and white team.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah, okay.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, good luck. That'd be fun.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited. I think we're excited.
I have a joke for you.
All right, let's hear it.
I told the joke to my 7-year-old daughter the other day, and she thought it was hilarious.
Perfect. So that's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be good. You ready?
Yeah.
Why can't you give Elsa a balloon?
I don't know. Why?
Because she'll just let it go.
Oh, that's a good one. I was trying to think of the songs, but I was drawing a blank. That's good. Funny. I like that one.
I wish I could take credit for it, but I don't know where I heard it somewhere.
Yeah, nice. I can see why your daughter liked that one.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, to get this topic started and this incredible story that we want to talk about today, I have kind of a precursor that that might be of interest that will lead into this. You ready?
All right. Yeah.
Took my family camping last night. It was the first time my kids had ever been camping. So I have a 7-year-old and a 3.5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And here locally in the state of Utah, there's just plenitude of campsites and hiking, yep, outdoor stuff. Luckily. And we live in a beautiful place. And it was amazing. We went up American Fork Canyon. We were in the outdoors. For those that don't know Utah, or at least Utah Valley, you know, going up American Fork Canyon, you can see the backside of one of the tallest peaks in the state. It's called Mount Timpanogos. Or if you're Siri, it's Timpanogos. That's how she says it on my phone.
That's funny. I never knew that.
Mount Timpanogos. Anyways, so you're staring at this beauty and, you know, being in nature. There's just so many wonderful, amazing, beautiful things about it. But I couldn't help but think, of course, based on our story today,
mm-hmm,
what it would be like to climb one of these peaks. And then it got me started thinking about one man in particular that has climbed many peaks. One in particular that is astounding, not human. I don't know how you want to describe it.
So, supernatural.
Yeah. Do you want to like give the audience a synopsis of this individual and kind of who we're talking about and why, maybe why, or just however much you want to talk about it?
Yeah, for sure. So today we're going to be talking about Alex Honnold, if you haven't seen it, Free Solo, the movie on Disney Plus, is all about him free soloing, which means climbing El Capitan or El Cap in Yosemite, mm-hmm, without any ropes or assistance. So just him, his bare hands, his climbing shoes, and some chalk. And to give you a little bit of background on why this is insane and completely crazy, this mountain or slab of granite,
right,
is
pretty much just a big slab.
Yeah, is 3,200 feet high. It's no small feat. Anyway, so we thought this would be a cool story to kind of dive into, because in the movie, he documents his whole journey, and there's a lot of really cool, I feel like, mental performance sides of it. Also, just the sheer fact that his sport or his hobby, he's putting his life on the line. There is no, like, mm-hmm, you, like he said in the movie, like, you either win or you die. And so, like, his approach to conquering this mountain or climbing this slab of granite, it's been his ultimate goal. His approach was very thought out and very thoughtful. And so I think diving into it is going to be really fun. And I'm excited to hear, especially from you, Matt, the psychological side of it and the mental preparation. I know when I watched it, I took a lot of notes because I was just like, this is insane.
I know.
But yeah, that's a little bit of background of Alex Honnold and the story that we want to dive into today.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar to our last episode, or at least the episode where we talked about the Olympics, Ashley and I want to gear some, maybe not all, but at least some of these future episodes towards stories and incredible, inspiring stories, sport related or not. We just think it's really interesting and engaging, and then pulling apart some of this, some of these stories that we find interesting from, of course, psychological preparation, emotional, you know, standpoint, relationship standpoint. So for those that haven't seen the film, again, the film is called Free Solo. It came out, when did it come out, Ashley? 17-ish? Maybe?
I think probably, 18? I think it might be 2018.
Okay, 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, just an incredible film. It essentially follows Alex in his preparation in attempting this climb of 3,200 feet, just over 3,000 feet, El Cap in Yosemite National Park. And like Ashley mentioned, there's so many wonderful things from his meticulous preparation and physical and mental challenges. And, you know, of course, this breathtaking climb itself. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I've seen this, I think, 5 or 6 times, half a dozen. You probably close, I think, right? 3 or 4? Mm-hmm. Somewhere around there. Every time he starts it, it's the music. It kind of goes silent. He gets there like early in the morning. And so, you know, from a dramatic Hollywood standpoint, it's like unbelievable. And then it's real. It's not Hollywoodized.
Yeah.
And so you're literally on the edge of your seat, kind of holding your breath, and you see his team that is surrounding him, not on the rock. He's the only one on this 3,000-foot rock face. But down below and at the top, and they're filming him, and they have a telescope. What's the word I'm looking for?
Camera
or whatever. They're seeing him on this rock, far above him. And it's so unbelievable to watch that a human being can do this and able to do it successfully. You know, there's, like I mentioned, there's a number of things, especially from a psychological standpoint, that I think are astounding. I want to get to one in particular eventually that I think is the most interesting. Mm-hmm. But before I get to that one, I think there are three or four, probably more, at least from my standpoint, that I have found really interesting. And then Ashley, please interrupt and add as I kind of share some of these things. First is this focus and concentration. So being able to climb this particular rock face without a rope requires kind of this unwavering focus, right? And concentration. Mm-hmm. And think about this. Not losing the concentration or recognizing when you perhaps do lose some focus or concentration to bring it back immediately. Because if you do make a single mistake, you're dead.
Yeah.
You're falling to your death. And so the focus and concentration is unbelievable. I talk to baseball players and golfers about this all the time in terms of focus and concentration. It's really next to impossible to be completely focused, completely concentrated throughout the whole game, throughout the whole match, which is 3 to 4 hours. You just can't do it as a human being. And so the idea is to recognize when your focus is waning, accept it. It's over here. I need to bring it back into where I am playing a baseball game or in a golf match. Anyway, so there's that alone. Like, can you imagine the amount of focus that he had to train and that he experienced in just doing that? And so that for me is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, something that we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast, Ashley, is this goal setting idea, or goal setting phenomena. So Honnold's achievement, you know, being able to, the importance of being able to set, you know, these clear kind of challenging goals and then committing to them fully. He was so committed to climbing in general, but climbing El Cap without a rope.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was so fun to see his determination throughout the process. It was, God, I don't know if they gave a timeline. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ashley, but it was years in the making, right?
Did
they mention a timeline?
I want to say 8 years, I think.
Yeah.
I think when he first, from what I remember at the end, one of his buddies congratulated him and said, like, something like only took you 8 years or 8 years in the making, which is crazy when you put that into perspective. But I think he was just someone who was so passionate about climbing and specifically like free soloing that when he was introduced to this climb or this mountain, he was like, that's something I want to do. And I think he just became obsessed with it, you know, and he lived in his van. I think also a reason why it probably took him 8 years is there's only certain months out of the year that he can actually attempt this because of the weather.
Right.
And so, like, I think every year he would just come back and he would practice and he would, obviously he had climbed it many times with the rope. But I think if you think back to the beginning of his journey, probably climbing it with the rope was something that he really wanted to do as an accomplishment, a goal that he had, because that alone, I feel like I couldn't climb it with the rope. Like, it takes so much like skill and knowledge in owning your craft as a rock climber to be able to climb it with a rope. And so it makes sense of why it took 8 years for him to do it, because he felt like he had to take that process of like step by step getting higher and higher, figuring out, his different grips, his holds, his different like foot positioning, all that kind of stuff. So it makes sense that it would
Yeah.
take 8 years.
You just alluded to kind of my next point. In conjunction or within this idea or this theme of goal setting is this beautiful psychological skill set of mental rehearsal. I don't know if it went over explicitly. You recently just watched the documentary. It's been a little bit since I've watched it. What he did in terms of visualization and imagery, do you remember explicit strategies that he was using?
Yeah, so he knew that he knew El Cap, like he memorized every single step, every single
Right.
like he
Hand
memorized,
hold and everything.
He memorized the every single route. I think they called it a route in
Route, route, yeah, same thing.
but in the show I remember like thinking like, is it a, I think it's a route, but they kept saying a route.
Okay.
So like a tree,
We're going to
like
call
has
it a
different
route.
roots. Yeah, I'm pretty
Oh,
sure it
like
was roots.
ROOT. Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
so I think they called it a
That makes
root.
sense. Yeah.
I know, 'cause I feel like I'm going crazy, but they keep saying root. Anyway, but it a part one of my favorite parts of the movie, which is really cool, that I would encourage people when they watch it to recognize it, but he had this journal, and he every
Yes.
single day he wrote like how it went, what he got stuck on, what he had trouble with, and then he had every single step written down, and he was like reading them out loud and memorizing them. I wrote down one of his lines in his notes.
Ooh.
He would say things like, trust the feet, like switch over the
I
feet here,
love it.
trust like trust this, trust that. And I was just like, wow, these are really cool. And like I don't know if he had any like mental performance coach like teaching him these things. It didn't seem like it, but it's just something that he found that like worked for him, that he did in preparation. And one thing that he talks about at the beginning of the movie is he in his mind he would say that the risk is low because his preparation was so good, but the consequence was always high. So in his mind that there was a difference between risk and consequence. And I thought that was very interesting because you think if it's a high risk, it's a high consequence. But in his mind, he wasn't as fearful of it, or as he continued to practice and prepare and just like literally own that mountain, he didn't see the risk as very high because like I'm so prepared. Like I believe in myself. I know I can do this, but the consequence will always be really high if you don't mess up or if you mess up. So yeah, but journaling and just like rehearsing, and then I think also just practicing so much like over and over. And then in his van he had that little grip thing in his
Yeah,
van,
I
he would
remember
just like
that.
hang there. But yeah, he like dedicated everything to achieving that one goal, which is really crazy.
And think of how psychologically comforting that was for him when he was actually on that morning attempting to do it successfully. But I mean, he attempted it numerous times, but especially the time he did it successfully. Think of the level of comfort he had psychologically and emotionally because of that preparation, and more specifically, because of this mental rehearsal. I mean, the whole idea behind mental rehearsal as a psychological skill set is you're creating comfort for an uncomfortable situation. And so you're going into a soccer game, you're going into a business presentation, you're going to climb El Cap. You start to visualize and integrate imagery and or imagery before all of this. In theory, you're going to be much more comfortable when it actually happens because you've been there before psychologically. So, doing all of these preparations holistically, of course, lended itself to his ultimate success of climbing this slab of rock successfully. Anyways.
Yeah, he said I wrote down here. He said, "I work through the fear until it's not scary anymore." And he talked about you're controlling, or you're not controlling your fear. You're just trying to step out of it. And then I feel like his level of self-awareness was honestly incredible, because as he's climbing and as you hear him kind of like talking himself through things, he was like, "Yeah, I just want to go and see what feels scary." And if he was like, if this feels scary, like, how do I make it not scary?" And that was like his preparation, like trying things over and over, trying things with the rope. There's one part of the route that was kind of one of the like riskier parts where he had two choices. He could either boulder it, which is you jump, like you literally like have your grip, you jump, let go, and then try and grip on. Or he had to do, I think they call it the karate kick, where he puts one leg out and then like crosses, like shimmies over. And it shows him doing it over and over and over with the rope and just like trying the karate kick, falling, trying the boulder, falling, and riding it down. Like he just wanted to, he had to. There was no option. He had to perfect every single step. And I feel like that is how he got over the fear or the things that felt scary. I don't
Because of
think it
his
was,
preparation.
yeah, his preparation was everything. So yeah, but his level of self-awareness is what helped him
I know.
continue to like try, fail until he ultimately succeeded.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, so many beautiful things in there. That fear part is what I want to get to here in just a second, which is, like I alluded to at the beginning, something that's the most interesting to me. One last kind of takeaway, at least from my perspective in watching and rewatching this film. Of course, I'm going to talk about resilience and perseverance. I just think he exudes it to the utmost degree. Being able to be consistently persistent through his training and in his self-beliefs. I mean, there were times relationally, at least in the film, that he had some ups and downs. And then in his own mind, I mean, you can tell throughout just the film, I'm sure there was a whole lot more going on that we didn't see as just from not watching or watching Free Solo. That emotionally and psychologically, there were, like us as human beings, there was a lot going on, a lot of ups and downs. And so he recognized the importance of being in a good headspace to be able to attempt something like this, not only to do it successfully, but to stay alive and not die. And so that for me was something that really stood out as well. Here's the last kind of huge takeaway, and you alluded to it already. This fear part. I, over the years, in studying the mind, studying human beings, and teaching about human beings. So this is a film I show my undergraduates almost every semester because of everything that we're talking about in my sports psychology class. Is this idea of fearless? And I wholeheartedly, this is just my opinion, agree that there is no such thing as being fearless. It's developing a healthy relationship with fear that I think is the main point. And so here's my challenge for everyone listening. When you hear somebody say that someone else or another team or anything, any other being is fearless, just throw caution to the wind. Because my guess is at some point that team, that individual did experience fear. It's just, how did they respond as a result of it? And so in the film, something really, really interesting happened. Neuroscientists, at least they showed, I don't know if they showed him actually going to the doctor. Maybe they did. Some of these neuroscientists, they performed an fMRI on his brain, right? And it showed that his brain, Alex Honnold's brain, doesn't respond to fear stimuli like a quote unquote normal brain. And so, but then I didn't really unpack it further from there. And so I've had students and people that have seen this that are like, well, that's why he can do this. That's why he's quote unquote fearless, because he doesn't respond to fear like us. And my response is, yeah, no joke. He doesn't respond to fear like us. This is Alex's quote from him after these neuroscientists have found that his brain is not normal, especially as it pertains to fear. He said, I find that slightly irritating because I've spent 25 years, that's a lot of years, conditioning myself to work in extreme conditions. So, of course, my brain is different. Just as the brain of a monk who has spent years meditating or a taxi driver who has memorized all the streets of a city would be different. Then he goes on to say that it's because of his preparation, like we've mentioned, why his brain is different, why it's not normal. So for years, like for instance, he was afraid of El Capitan. Of course, it's a 3,000-foot rock wall in Yosemite, and the idea of trying to climb up it without a rope, that's going to be scary for anybody. So he goes on to say, I would drive into Yosemite, I would look at the wall, and I would think, no way, too scary. So then to gradually expand his comfort zone, he would climb El Cap hundreds of times with a rope, and then slowly maybe take off a rope for certain sections so he could get used to some of this, the idea of climbing it, the whole thing, without a rope, which happened on June 3rd, 2017, and he became the first. Anyways, so this idea of fearless is really interesting to me. And I believe as... In working with high performers, and if there's anyone listening that's wanting to perform at any kind of high level, you're probably at some point experiencing fear, experiencing some sort of anxiety. Don't try to get rid of it. And don't try to think that it needs to go away so that you can perform at your very best. You just simply need to respond to it differently. And if we're using Alex's example, you need a lot of practice. So if you're presenting in front of a group and that gives you a lot of fear, and according to a lot of different reports and a lot of research, our number one fear as human beings is public speaking. Go speak in front of people. Start with two people, then expand it to four, then expand it to a dozen. Practice speaking in front of people, because you're gradually, like Alex, expanding this comfort zone. It probably starts out really minuscule, but then as you deliberately practice, like Alex was doing, you're going to stare at this mountain that might be really scary, but then eventually you'll start to recognize, ooh, I can still do this even though I am still experiencing some sort of fear. Maybe it's on a really small level, or maybe it's somewhere in between. Anyways, what do you think, Ash, with some of that? I know you shared some of that, your thoughts on that, but take it.
No, I think it's all very fascinating. And I guess I have some questions for you, because the part where they do scan his brain, I thought was really interesting, and I wish that they dove into it a little bit more. Do you remember the name of the part of the brain that the doctor was talking about that, I think it was like something that like registers fear and a lot of emotion?
Oh, the hypothalamus? Not the hypothalamus, hold on. Fear center of the brain.
Yeah, I think it started with an A. But anyway, amygdala, yes, that's what it was. Amygdala. So my question for you, just because I don't really understand the brain as much as you probably do, but is the amygdala something that like not really a muscle, but something that you can develop, like Alex kind of like alluded to, like the reason why he's not registering fear as much is because he does these crazy scary things and practices and prepares. So are you saying that that's something that has been like trained, kind of like a nature versus nurture type of
totally
conversation. That's something that he has trained, and that's the reason why his brain is the way it is, not because he was born that way.
100%.
Okay.
No one comes hardwired with the ability to not experience fear, or this abnormality to not respond to fear, unless something is seriously wrong with the brain.
Yeah.
The idea is that emotions like fear are shaped by experience, by prior experiences.
Yeah.
And so at first, when he even just merely thought of the idea of trying to climb El Cap without a rope, I'm sure the amygdala was going crazy. And as he alluded to, he would stand in front of this mountain going, no way, way too scary. But as you shape that experience, you're giving different meaning to it, especially in the present sensational experiences in those moments. And then you're adding more to it and adding more to it. So the fear and preparation, especially in Alex's case, were inversely kind of relational or proportional. So the idea is the level of fear greatly depends on the level of your preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not, once again, that it's going to be fearless or the amygdala is going to be completely shut down. You're just going to experience it differently and still be able to perform at a really, really high level. And so, you know, I'm not a neuroscientist. I wish I knew the brain more than I actually do. I'm what you call a social scientist. Woo.
Yeah.
But that's the whole take home message, at least from kind of this neurological, scientific standpoint.
Yeah.
Is finding the preparation to combat or relate, I should say, to the fear differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of what I gathered from the movie, but they didn't dive into it enough for, I feel like, the viewers to kind of really understand that. They're just like, look, this part of his brain isn't like everyone else's. We're like,
right.
That's probably why in the quote that you shared, he was frustrated. He's like, well, no, duh. Like, I've been practicing this my whole entire life. But when you were talking about the reason why his, you know, levels of fear are different because of his preparation, or the first time he drove up and saw El Capitan and said, whoa, no way, that's scary. It reminded me of another quote that he said when he was talking to his girlfriend at the time. He was just saying, like, I think her name was Sunny. He was like, Sunny lives to be like happy. Like, if she's happy and the other people around her are happy, then like that's a successful life for her. And he's like, I live for like performance. I want to achieve my goals. And he said, no one achieves anything from being happy and cozy. And he just says it so nonchalantly. But he's right. Like, we all kind of, like, as you're alluding to with the public speaking, we all don't grow unless we do things that are scary, or we step out of that happy and cozy little bubble that we want to be in. But he also shares that he expanded his comfort zone by practicing over and over. So imagine how much happier and how much cozier we can be when we expand that comfort zone. I feel like it's this kind of this false idea that we're going to stay happy and cozy if we don't do things that challenge us. But then that means our comfort zone is going to be like itty bitty. It's going to be this small because there's going to be a lot of things that don't make us happy and cozy. But if we kind of like push those boundaries, we expand our house, then we're going to have more things that we're going to be happy and cozy, and we're going to be happy and cozier for maybe a little bit longer. And then we're going to be like, okay, like, I want to push myself and I want to continue to achieve this. And you go out and you do it. And then your happy and cozy bubble gets bigger and bigger. But I just thought that was like so interesting. I'm curious to see what he does next, because he just accomplished something that no one I don't even know if anyone else could do it. I'm sure, you know, people seeing him do it, they maybe want to do it. But just like the level of commitment that you see in the film as you watch it, he just eliminates distractions. He's so self-aware, even with his relationship with his girlfriend at the
Oh, good.
time, who I think is now his wife. I think Jeff and I googled it.
Oh, sweet. Good for him.
Yeah, they have two
Another
kids now.
uncomfortable. Oh, sweet. Yeah. Good for
Yeah.
Alex.
But yeah, I think the day that he actually did it, I think he told her to like leave, or she like drove away. I think he just wanted to eliminate all distractions, which I can
Right.
respect, but I feel like that would be really, really hard. But another thing that's very interesting too is the first time that he attempted to do it free, like without any ropes, he attempted to free solo it. He stopped and he like waved the white flag and he was like, I don't feel good. I can't do it. He's like, I cheated. I grabbed one of the like ropes or hooks or something. And I thought it was really cool that they showed that because he didn't push through it. I think if you hear his story and you hear the end result, you think like, he probably like grinded it out and he just like pushed through it. He's careless, he was reckless, but it's the exact opposite. He was so careful and he was so particular and he knew that he wasn't, I don't think he was like really feeling it that day. He didn't want to tell his girlfriend too, like when he was deciding to do it. He was very, very self-aware. And as he was like, he didn't even get that far up. He was just like, I can't do it today. I don't want to do it. And if you think about all that preparation, I feel like I'm sure he felt a lot of internal pressure and probably external pressure from all the
Totally.
cameras there, the people that are working with him. But he didn't do it. And so he came down and he kept practicing, waited till he felt better, and then he went and tried again. I think that's a huge lesson for all of us to learn when we're going for our goals or something like that. It's like, it's okay. You don't have to like push through something that's going to be detrimental to you. You can still like achieve it. And I thought that was like very commendable of him. And I feel like he gained so much trust from his team when he did
Yeah,
do that because they were
totally.
like, they were all so scared. They had so many honest conversations of like, we will do this, but like, we want to let you know, like, this is scary for us because like, we don't want to see you fail because that would be terrible
We
for
don't
all
want to
of
watch
us.
you die, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the conversations that he has with his crew and everything, like they are just all so open and so honest and raw that I feel like that's why it worked. And I feel like that step was really important for him to actually achieve what it was that he wanted to achieve. I feel like that step was crucial in gaining the trust of his crew and that he trusted himself. And I think his crew really appreciated that too. Like it kind of like he you could tell he was disappointed, but it's like we'd rather have
Right.
that than you push through something and then not be successful. So I thought that was really cool too.
100% to all of it. Ditto, 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 ditto. We need a jingle, don't we?
Yeah, I think you should do it.
You want me to do it? You want me to come up with one?
Yeah, maybe.
Embarrass my wife half to death. Basically, if I had to summarize everything you just said, which was awesome, I would say quality from quantity. So if you out there, you want to have confidence like Alex and be able to climb your own 3,000-foot rock wall without a rope, whether it's in business or sport or relationships, whatever you are doing, start by climbing it hundreds of times with a rope. Quantity. Eventually, that's going to be quality. And then do so deliberately. Like you just mentioned, I think it was very deliberate of him to say, this isn't the day. So I need to try again another day. So, anyways, there's just so much we can learn from this extraordinary human being and this extraordinary feat that he did. So find your own route in your life, ROOT,
Yep.
And know that you don't need to be fearless, folks. In fact, welcome the fear and start to change how you relate to that fear in your own life. And I promise eventually things will start to unfold in ways that in my mind are going to be both subjectively and objectively successful. So that's my, I guess, my drop the mic moment.
Nice.
What about you, Ashley? What else from this experience did you have?
No, I really like that. I think there's an endless amount of lessons that we can learn.
Right.
I think one of, I keep saying this is my favorite, but this is also another one of my favorite parts is when he does conquer that one maneuver, the boulder challenge or whatever it was, when he's free soloing and he does it. And then he just like has the biggest smile on his face. And I think when you're prepared and that preparation fuels your confidence, you see it a lot in athletes when they're doing something, like they're just honed in and they do something and they know it's good and they finally like crack a smile and then they start having fun. And it's so fun to watch those athletes perform. After he finished that maneuver and conquered that move, the rest he was just coasting. And it was so fun to watch him. And the only way he could have gotten to that point where he could finally crack a smile free soloing a mountain that's 3,200 feet high was because of his preparation. So I would just, that's kind of my biggest takeaway is you get to those moments by preparing, and it's just, it was so fun to watch and really, really cool. But yeah, ditto to everything that you said. And yeah, thanks for all your thoughts.
Yeah, I just saw that, in fact, watching Gabby Thomas run the 200. Did you watch her run that in the Olympics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So fun. That joy and that preparation. I mean, you could just tell, like, everything you just said just materialized. Yeah. Anyways, yes.
Yeah.
All right. That was a wonderful episode. I think, hopefully you thought, you listener.
Yes.
Alex Honnold is one of, I think, about a billion stories that we could start to share on this platform that's, you can unpack from 3,000, oh, I didn't even mean to do that, 3,000 viewpoints, and he climbed a 3,000-foot rockfall. Look how I'm just, like,
nice.
Seamlessly integrating
Genius.
Puns. Listener, if you liked it, please do the heart button and the thumbs up button and the share button, whatever that looks like on your screen. Share with a friend, share with a family member. We would love to, you know, get the message out that we just want to talk about things that are hopefully inspiring to people and helping you be a better human being. And then if you're doing all that, please leave us a review. If you love it, please let us know. If you think we can improve, please let us know. And then, let us know what we can do to improve. And if you want a certain guest, put it in the notes. Or if you want a certain topic, put it in the notes. Anyways, so please like, share, love, shout it from the rooftops, etc. Ashley?
Yes, we would appreciate all of that. Also, we are in the works of gathering questions for our Q&A bonus episode. So if you have any specific questions for Matt or I, please check out the notes and submit your questions. But as always, we appreciate you all. Thanks for listening. Matt and Ash are out.
D-I-T-T-O.
Ditto.